I'm Richard van der Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 147 for the weekend starting 3 June 2016.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, the home of intelligent technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, we chat about the court judgment against Faith Mutambi over set-top boxes.
Also this week, a fire at ICASA's offices, thieves walking off with Telkom's network, turnaround at Kojima, and of course the new Top Gear.
Let's get the show on the road.
Well, welcome to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
Very good. Sitting outside, but it's a bit chilly and being June.
Winter is coming.
Winter is here.
Yeah, it's certainly a bit chillier than normal podcast recording outside.
Absolutely. But things are a bit warm at ICASA's offices this week, weren't they?
Yeah, they didn't have a problem with the air conditioner.
First we got wind of it was when an eyewitness, let's call him, at ICASA sent us a message saying ICASA is burning down. It's like, whoa, what? Come again? Literally? Or
not figuratively speaking.
And he sent some pictures through, and indeed, one of their office blocks had caught a blaze. We haven't seen an official report on exactly what happened, but it was extinguished fairly quickly, I believe, by the emergency services. The eyewitness report suggests that it was caused by an exploding air conditioner, not by an aggrieved licensee. There to burn,
interesting. Yeah, yeah.
Burn the offices down. But it doesn't seem there was anything malicious behind it. But so the picture suggested that it was quite a blaze. If you could see the flames pouring out the windows.
Yeah, I saw that photograph.
Fire at ICASA's offices. And the building housed a whole lot of things, but among them were type approval documents and licenses. Mm. Apparently, all the documents that are housed there are backed up off-site.
Good.
So there's no loss of any license material or any other documentation. Mm. If it was in fact a malicious incident, but all indications are that it was a faulty air conditioning unit.
Okay.
But I must say, I've never heard of an air conditioner causing a fire.
Causing a fire like that. I guess it's possible. I remember when I was at those offices more than a year ago, they were a little bit dilapidated in some areas, I found.
Which is funny, because
they weren't bad, but they're
really
just
upmarket part of Santa.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah, the offices clearly have not been maintained from what I saw.
Yeah.
But it didn't look that bad. It just was a little dilapidated.
It was,
a little worn.
Yeah.
Worn for the wear.
Yeah. Anyway, not much more to say about that, I don't think. But another story where there was some heat this week, if we'll continue with the metaphor, was at the Supreme Court of Appeal in Bloemfontein, where the communications minister, Faith Mutambi, had it handed to her on a platter. ETV winning its court case, its appeal, after losing at the High Court in Pretoria on this ongoing battle.
Never ending.
Over encryption of free-to-air television broadcasts in our move to digital television. And the saga has been going on for so long now. This victory is probably going to set us back again. It all depends on how the communications minister responds to this.
Mm.
And she could really respond in a number of ways. She could seek leave to appeal and go to the Constitutional Court, which I think would be a silly idea, given that the judgment found that it was actually the process that was at fault rather than the policy itself. The court made no judgment on whether encryption was good or bad.
Mm.
It very deliberately and probably very cleverly steered away from that, and found instead that the minister had failed to, in effect, there were a number of grounds for the judgment, but I think the biggest one was that she failed to consult adequately with both the statutory bodies that are responsible for regulating the space, principally ICASA. But also the Universal Service and Access Agency of South Africa, which has a big responsibility in the digital migration project, specifically for around the tendering for the set-top boxes and the distribution of those set-top boxes, but also failing to consult with ETV and other industry players on the amendment, which really sought to change the previous compromise agreement, I guess you could call it, that the previous minister, Yunus Karim, had come up with, and really go for a policy where there would be no encryption in the set-top boxes for South Africa's digital migration project. Now, I'm not going to go through all the background here because we've done it in previous podcasts.
Yeah.
We've written about it ad nauseum on the website. But the battle really comes down to the battle between two commercial broadcasters, MultiChoice, which is against, and ETV, which is in favor of it. And then we've got lobby groups on both sides. We even had a set of box manufacturing association called NAMIC split in two, with half them, or some of the members coming out in support of MultiChoice, and some of the other members coming out in support of the ETV position. Of course, the set-top box manufacturers, it's very much in their favor that there be encryption in these boxes, because that would mean that we have these set-top boxes in the market in perpetuity, whereas if we didn't have encryption, then the set-top box would always be a temporary issue. I'm still very much of the view that it's a mistake to include encryption in the set-top boxes. I believe that the argument put forward by ETV is spurious, and that that South Africa should not divert from the route taken in most markets around the world, and that we should not have encryption in these set-top boxes, and that HDMI through the high-definition copy protection built into the HDMI standard is sufficient protection to protect against piracy, and should be enough to alleviate the concerns of the content providers, the international content providers. So I think there's been a lot of discussion around this issue, and a lot of nonsense spouted about, you know, the advantages and disadvantages of both approaches. And it's almost always down to lobbying as to, you know, whose interests are best served by which position. And it's a fact that the set-top box industry's best interests are served by there being encryption in the boxes. It's a fact that ETV and prospective broadcasters' interests are best served by there being encryption in the boxes, because then they don't have to incur the huge cost of deploying set-top boxes into the market, because they can pre-deployed by the government through the government subsidy, which is going to provide 5 million free set-top boxes to poorer households across the country, which creates a wonderful base on which to build a pay TV business. And MultiChoice, of course, it's in its interest to argue against encryption in the boxes, because putting conditional access in all these 5 million boxes out in the field effectively amounts, as they have said, and I think correctly so, to unfair competition. So everyone is arguing their point, but I think if you take a step back and look at this as an independent observer, And stop listening to all the BS and noise that gets spouted by both sides, and there's one heck of a lot of it. Once you take a completely independent, unbiased view of this, which I believe I've done over following this case over the years, that there isn't a case for encryption in set-top boxes. I think it's unfortunate that the minister has erred in amending the policy and not consulting widely enough. I think that the decision that she made in that policy was the correct one, but she may have reached it for the wrong reasons, and she certainly went about, as the High Court, or as the Supreme Court has showed, went about making the amendment in the wrong way. I think the best solution to all of this would be for her to, unfortunately it's going to take time, but to consult again with the various industry role players and listen to all the lobbyists again. But come to the same conclusion that there shouldn't be encryption in the set-top boxes, and that the broadcast signal for free-to-air television should not be encrypted, and that if broadcasters want to launch pay television services, that they should pay out of their own pockets to build that infrastructure and deploy those set-top boxes into homes. Anyway, end of rant.
I think there's nothing more to say. I think you succinctly summed it up.
I'm probably going to get lots of hate mail after saying all of that from the pro-encryption camp, but the more I look at this, the more I'm convinced that is the correct position, and that's the position that should be argued. And I think it's just unfortunate that the biggest player in the industry, the dominant player in this industry, who everyone suggests needs competition, and it does need competition because it has become so entrenched and so dominant, and that's MultiChoice. But I'm not sure that this is the right way to tackle the competition. I think it's probably better to, if you want to approach it that way, and I'm not saying it's the right way, but a better way to approach competition maybe through other regulatory means, like we've seen in Europe, where the regulators mandate that a certain percentage of sport, for example, has to be shared with other players in the market. that certain services need to be unbundled. You know, the question is, why has there been no focus by the regulator, for example, on unbundling SuperSport from MultiChoice? Those two are very tightly close together. In fact, there was a complaint by Top TV, now Starsat, several years ago to the Competition Commission about this very subject, and it's gone nowhere. And it's not clear why that is the case, why the Competition Commission has it's still sitting on it, as far as I know, but there's been no development in that regard. Now, I'm not saying that regulation a split of SuperSport from the rest of the business is the right approach. I'm not sure it is. I'd have to sit down and have a proper think about that and talk to economists and formulate a viewpoint on it. But I'm pretty convinced that that this encryption approach, which is ultimately going to cost consumers, because we're going to have these set-top boxes in perpetuity and have them supported in perpetuity, which is great for the set-top box manufacturers, but not great for consumers. I'm convinced that that's not the right way to go.
Yeah. And the question that I have is, somebody going to gain financially from going that way, which...
going the encryption route.
Yeah, going the encryption.
Sure, the set-top box manufacturers are going to benefit from it. Mm. Because, you know...
You can't just change.
Because you're always going to have a set-top box of some kind.
Yeah.
Anyway, let me stop ranting about that subject, because enough has been said on it in the past, I think, but it's unfortunately not over. And Faith Mutambi has to make some very smart decisions in the coming weeks about exactly how she's going to tackle this issue. Given past performance, I'm not hopeful. Mm. Interesting story that came out earlier this week about from Telkom. It's actually a statement that Telkom put out. Saying that, effectively saying, it's a headline we put on the story, saying that thieves are in effect walking off with Telkom's network. I'm specifically talking here about its copper network. But I'm just going to get the story up on my screen here because it's worth quoting a couple of figures. But we've known that copper theft has been a problem for a long time. And Telkom saying the copper price is on the rise again, and this is leading to increasing numbers of incidents of copper theft. But the release they put out this week, interestingly timed, by the way, exactly a week before their annual results presentation this coming Monday, and one wonders if it's kind of in preparation for a shocking copper cable connection number, if we're going to see the number of fixed lines and service declining quite sharply this year, and blaming copper theft for that decline. But that waits to be. We'll have to wait to Monday to see that. But Telkom saying it registered more than 6,000 incidents of copper cable theft on its network in the past year, and as a result, and I'm reading here, is now actively moving its customers from the technology to wireless and fiber alternatives. Now they said these criminals, Jackie O'Sullivan, who's Telkom's spokeswoman, said these criminals now target our manholes armed with customized heavy-duty vehicles, allowing them to hitch the cable to the vehicle and drive out kilometers of cable, cutting off thousands of customers in a single incident. You've got to have a lot of you've got to feel for Telkom here. I mean, 6,000 incidents a year, how do you police that? And their network is all over the country, so you can't exactly put a security guard on every manhole. It's impossible. But it's a big problem for the company, and I think the approach of moving people to wireless in areas where the problem is acute, and also perhaps accelerating the fiber rollout is the right strategy.
Yeah,
even if it's expensive in the short term.
Well, something will have to be done. I mean, Telkom's already losing a large proportion of the customer base due to other fiber deployers.
Mm.
So it's in any case a good idea to move all those guys to a much better infrastructure in any case. But it's actually insane how much of a problem copper theft is in the country. I mean,
you go to any of the peri-urban areas around the cities. I mean, I live in Randburg. You go out to somewhere like North Riding, which is not far out of the city. It's on the edge of the city. And you go there and you'll see Telkom poles and there's no cabling on them. It's been removed. It's either been stolen or Telkom has gone and removed it.
Yeah.
And I hear stories all over the place. Anyone just on the edge of the cities, Telkom is going in there, sawing down their poles, taking the cables away, putting up a base station. Here, have LTE if you're lucky.
Yeah. Otherwise, fibre if you're really lucky.
Well, they're not doing fibre in the peri-urban areas.
No, for sure.
Fibre's only in the well-to-do suburbs for now.
But also with the high density of those areas, like North Riding, I mean, it's devastating to have cables stolen because there are thousands of people within one square block, really, or hundreds of people within one or two blocks. Yeah, let's hope we get that fiber in much quicker, but it's going to be a problem. I mean, there's a lot of copper.
And I do feel for people who live in these areas who then don't have a fixed line option. Mm-hmm. Because wireless is relatively expensive, although Telkom's wireless prices are very aggressive. But the fact is, wireless is not as good as a cable-based solution.
Especially in those high-density areas where there are lots of people in complexes. So your base station usage ratios or contention ratios are much higher than what they should be in any case.
Yeah.
Or people just passing through a suburb.
Yeah.
I think the only way to stop this, there's been a lot of talk about what needs to be done to prevent copper theft and potentially making it a precious metal where, you know, stealing it or selling it is where the criminal can be caught, as opposed to
trying
to wait for somebody to sell it and then bust the scrap metal yard.
Indeed. Anyway, at this point we normally take an ad break, but before we get there, Rachot, we forgot to do the quiz at the beginning of the show. So why don't we do that now? Yes, we'll take the ad break and then we'll come back to some more news. Rachot, do you want to kick off with our first question? By the way, if you're listening to this for the first time, it's just a fun quiz. There's no prizes involved. It's just just to see if you've, just a bit of a test to see if you're on top of what's been happening in the tech world.
Of the current affairs in the tech world, yes.
So what's that first question?
So the first question, what was the size of the severance package Altron paid to former Altec CEO Craig Venter?
Second question, which former telecoms CEO has joined the board of Gajima?
The third question, enterprise ICT startup Snapt has raised 15 million rand in funding from which local investment firm?
Fourth question, Huawei launched which high-end smartphone in South Africa this week?
And for the final question, which broadcaster this week won its appeal against the 2015 amendments to South Africa's digital migration policy?
Well, if you listen to the show, you'll know the answer to that one. We'll be back right after this message.
Hello world. Hello information. Hello uploads and downloads. Hello streaming videos and low latency. Hello blogs and vlogs. Hello crystal clear video calls. Hello increased productivity. Hello online learning. Hello cloud. Hello long lost friends and missed connections. Hello limitless possibilities and instant gratification. Say hello to premium high speed fiber from Vox Telecom. Pleasure guaranteed. Visit voxtelecom.co.za for more information.
Chicken or beef? Chicken or beef?
Chicken.
There's so many companies offering fiber at the moment, but with Vox Telecom's premium high-speed fiber, you'll be joining the Smile High Club.
Duck or salmon, sir?
We call it business class fiber. We guarantee our uptime and can tailor our services to suit your needs and budget. Say hello to business class fiber from Vox Telecom. Visit voxtelecom.co.za for more information.
Well, welcome back to the show. How's it, Rachot?
How's it?
So, I had a fascinating chat earlier this week, or was it last week? It's time's flying by. I think it was earlier this week with Eileen Wilton, who's the CEO of Gajima, a formerly listed IT group, which has been through a terrible time over the last few years. In fact, at one point last year, it looked like they were on the verge of bankruptcy. Their auditor basically said, there's serious concerns about this as a going concern, which was a big concern given that they employed 2,500-3,000 people. Yeah. Anyway, at the end of this month, will be signing off on their turnaround and declaring it done. They've already returned to profitability on a month-to-month basis. They're a smaller organization now. They haven't gone through massive retrenchments, but they have reduced their workforce through natural attrition by about 1,000 to about 2,000 people. But they appear to have turned the corner. The company is 100% owned now by Robert Gumede, the billionaire businessman, who fully underwrote a rights offer last year, which left a very small number of shareholders. I think it was something like 8% or 10% of the group held in by non-Robert Gumede companies or interests. So at that point, he made a decision to delist the company, and he made an offer to those minorities, and he's delisted the business. This is now a 2,000 company business turning over billions of rands a year, 100% owned and controlled by Robert Gumede.
That's how you do business.
And now it's turning around. But he took a big bet on this as well. That company was in serious trouble. He put his money behind it through a succession of rights offers. And he's now delisted the business, and it's turning the corner, and it's attracting some some heavy hitters to its board as well. If you were listening to the quiz just before the ad break, one of the questions is about who's joined the board, and one of them is none other than Sifiso Dabengwa, the former group CEO of MTN. He's joined as a non-executive director, along with people who've been in the industry for a long time will remember Alan Farthing, the former financial director of Business Connection, who was FD when Peter Watt was there. This was before the deal with the Mopatlane twins. And Clive Butkow, the former chief operating officer of Accenture in South Africa, is the third person who's joined the board. So they're attracting some heavy hitters, and they're talking a good game under Eileen Wilton. He's a former CIO, by the way, at Anglo American and at Old Mutual. He jumped the fence from the buyer side to the seller side. Things are looking up there. It's still a very thin margin business, but they've certainly saved Kojima, and there was certainly a concern at one point that the business wasn't going to make it. Right, the last item, bit of fun, I think. did you watch the new Top Gear this week?
I didn't watch the new show, but you couldn't miss the comments online.
Indeed. I watched it on Tuesday evening, and my word... don't think I'll be watching the next one.
There's no the biggest complaint I heard was there was no synergy between the cast.
No, members. No. I mean, there's been lots of speculation and suggestions prior to the broadcast of the first episode that the two hosts, Chris Evans and Matt LeBlanc, were fighting with each other behind the scenes.
You mean unlike Jeremy Clarke's fighting with the crew?
Yeah, but, I mean with the old Top Gear, with Clarkson and May and Hammond, it was very clear those guys like each other.
Yeah.
Even though they're ribbing each other and taking.
They were very tight. They're
buddies, and it's very clear that this situation with LeBlanc and Evans is very forced.
Mm.
The other criticism I have of the show is that it still follows the Top Gear formula too much, and I suppose they did have lots of debate about that internally about, don't mess too much with the winning formula. But the problem is the formula only worked because it was Clarkson.
With the right people.
Yeah. I found Chris Evans, I don't really know Chris Evans. I think he is a radio host, or was a radio host on one of the BBC stations. Yeah. I think he did the breakfast show on BBC One or something. I don't really know him. This is my first real exposure to him. I found him very shouty. He shouted right through the episode. It was it was quite unpleasant. It also sounded as if his mic was detached or something. There was a kind of an echo. I don't know if there was some sort of sound problem associated with him. I'm not sure if they actually switched off his mic because he was shouting too much and just used other mics to pick up his voice. Mm. But I think he is not the right guy to lead the show. Matt LeBlanc, I think, did a better job, especially when he wasn't with Chris Evans. He did an insert later in the show, which I thought was classic Top Gear. It was pretty good, which is pretty interesting given this is an American hosting a British show, and he's actually doing the best job out of the new presenters.
Before you said that, no, I wouldn't have thought Matt LeBlanc would have been a good fit either. I mean, just Top Gear, you don't necessarily want a motor car race driver to host it, but you also don't want somebody that's a character to watch, that knows what they're talking about, that's not necessarily directly a car. Car race driver or somebody in the industry, a good journalist that can talk about it. And to me, that's what the old Top Gear had.
Exactly. And it was so politically incorrect. And Clarkson is so politically incorrect. Yeah. He doesn't care. He'll just, if it is politically incorrect, he'll deliberately say it. I don't know if the new guys can get away with that. They're not Clarkson.
And with the new crew, it also seems to me, and again, I haven't watched the show, but from everything that I've seen, it's almost like they were trying to create. It's like creating a Hollywood version of Top Gear. Trying to create this polished thing, where the old Top Gear wasn't polished.
Yeah,
it was beautifully shot, but everything else was rough around the edges.
The production values were still brilliant. I mean, the guys behind it doing the production of Top Gear, and they've clearly retained those guys because and they spend money on it. The production values are fantastic.
But it shows you can spend all the money on a good production value if the story isn't there, or if the characters aren't there.
Yeah.
These are characters.
Yeah. And the best thing about Top Gear, and they didn't do it in this episode, and I don't know if they're going to try and do it in future episodes, was the challenges. Especially when they, do epic things like race across Europe or,
A little challenge that they have to do for the day or for the show.
Yeah, like when they drove across Botswana and the And the president of Botswana came in on a microlight. I mean,
good times.
You know, I don't know if these new guys can repeat that, but I don't know. Maybe I'll watch it a few more times, give it a chance.
But we haven't seen a lot of Clarkson. He's shooting his new part of his new show. Yeah.
Amazon Prime, and they announced it this week that the first. It looks like they're going to literally travel the world and shoot in each country. And the news this week is that the first episode is going to be shot in Johannesburg.
Yeah, the competition was you can enter it and potentially win tickets to that. Well worth checking in.
So I think that's happening in July. So I'm not sure when they're planning to actually release the show. I think it's sometime later this year. But I'm looking forward to that, I must say. It's called The Grand Tour, is it?
The Grand Tour.
Going to be good. Quite a clever name, actually. Right, regular features time. Let me pick our winner this week. And I think it was an easy one, watching that share price shoot up. And that's it's unusual to pick a company, but it was such a landmark development that I think it's worth picking as our winner this week. And that's Naspers. These market capitalizations shot through 1 trillion rand this week.
Really? For the first time.
That's nice. 1,000 billion rand. All driven by Tencent, of course, the Chinese company that they own about 33% or 34% of. That company's share price has been shooting up as well. It's one of the biggest internet companies in China now. And of course, Naspers doesn't only own Tencent, but they own a lot of other assets as well. But those are largely discounted in the valuation. They own MultiChoice, they own a number of e-commerce assets, and they still own a bunch of newspapers in South Africa. For some reason, I'm not quite sure why. that's our pick this week. Naspers, a 1 trillion rand market cap. In dollar terms, it doesn't sound quite as exciting. It's about $60 billion. But still, $60 billion not to be sniffed at. It puts them up there with some of the biggest American companies. Certainly not in the Facebook or Google league, but they're a big company.
South Africa needs some big hitters with money to spend on the ground here, so it's a good thing.
Yeah, it's very, very good. Our loser this week.
I
don't know how many times we picked this guy.
He's going to get the company car after this one. The loser, Claudio Motsoeneng.
I don't think he needs a company car. SAPC's probably bought him several already. But Claudio Motsoeneng, the chief operating officer of the SABC, for censoring, as I wrote on the show notes, the good news. No, censoring the bad news. No violent protest to be shown on the SABC. And then a couple of days later, being quoted in the media as saying that too much education is a bad thing.
Sorry, Stalin.
How would you know, Mr. Botsaneng? You don't have any. Anyway.
Yeah, actually, his benchmark's very low.
Indeed. What's your pick this week, Rafa?
So, there's a little app. I've been trying to get up earlier and kind of living a good active lifestyle early in the day rather than late in the day. And I was looking for some cool alarm clock apps, and I came across a little application by a man called The Rock. I'm sure you've heard of him.
Yeah, Chris Rock.
No. The Rock, WWE, The Rock, the wrestler.
Oh, no, I don't.
It's called Rock the Clock, and it is actually one of the coolest little applications I've seen in a long time. And if you haven't seen any of his stuff on YouTube, The Rock is actually a very funny guy. And he's got some really cool things that he's doing on the TV space, but on the video side. But this application, essentially what it does is, like a normal alarm clock, you can set your time for it to wake you up, but it's also got a bit of a motivational angle to it. So throughout the day, or throughout as you set it up, you can get him to motivate you. But the funniest thing for me, or one of the best things for me, is in the morning when you set your alarm clock. I'm just trying to call this app. There's a variety of ring or audio clips or ringtones that you can get him to wake you up to, and these are brilliant. So let me just play you the one that I listen to in the morning when I wake up.
Good morning. No.
Good morning, sunshine. Yeah, that's what The Rock just said. Open your eyes up. Get your candy ass out of bed.
And there's a whole bunch of different ones. I mean, this is also classic.
Beep, 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 beep.
Oh, that's just him going beep, 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 beep.
I can do this all morning.
Beep. Is it a free app?
It's a free app, yeah. I mean, it puts a smile on my face every morning when it goes off, and I absolutely love it. The Rock Clock, well worth checking out. It's available on Android and iOS. We'll put the links in the show notes below.
Great stuff. I must say, I use an app called Gentle Alarm for Android, and it's very, very good. You can download these beautiful nature sounds, and it fades in over like 15 minutes. You'll have the sound of a stream, a babbling brook or whatever, and you can fade it in over 5, 10, 15 minutes, and it just gently wakes you up.
What is it called?
It's called Gentle Alarm.
So it's the opposite of the Rock Clock.
Exactly.
Essentially the opposite.
Exactly. There are probably several apps called Gentle Alarm in the Play Store, so look for the one with the sort of orange, it's a picture of a clock with an orange clock with a blue face.
Nice.
And I highly rate it because it is probably the most customizable alarm out there. It'll let you do just about anything.
If you want to go for the boring choice, if you want to go for the really exciting choice, go for the Rock Clock.
Okay. Anyway, my pick this week, and it's also kind of health related, is the Garmin Index Smart Scale, which I bought last week. Grand intentions to lose some weight this winter, because I usually do the opposite when the hibernation period sets in. And it works really well. It's a Wi-Fi connected scale. It also has Ant Plus and other Bluetooth support as well. It primarily uses Wi-Fi to sync with the Garmin Connect service, which, if you have a Garmin device, you'll know is their online service for viewing your exercise, your activities, all your data. And it's really cool. It's, you can access it through the web or through an iOS or Android app. And the smart scale takes your weight and takes a whole lot of other metrics as well. It shows you your BMI. Mine's currently sitting just over 25, so I need to get that down a little bit. It's actually really cool. I had an old, a mechanical scale, which I hopped on occasionally, and there was no incentive. You couldn't actually see yourself, how your weight was moving, because it was kind of an approximation of what your weight was. With this, it's measured in 100-gram increments, so you can actually see if you've lost 100 grams from day to day. And it puts it into pretty charts in your Garmin Connect, so you can, as soon as I've weighed myself in the morning, I go to my office, go to Garmin Connect, check out the pretty graph of how my weight's come down, which it hasn't really done that much yet. I think there might be something wrong with the scale.
Check the battery.
it works really well, seriously, it's a bit pricey. I think the retail price is about $2.8. If you want to get serious about losing some weight and getting fit, the Garmin Index Smart Scale, especially if you already own a Garmin device and you're already in that Garmin Connect ecosystem, I think it's a worthwhile purchase. If you're keen to monitor your weight, if you're training for something, if you're trying to get to an ideal weight, if you're trying to get your BMI to a certain level, or your it measures other things like bone mass and muscle mass and all that sort of thing. I'm not quite sure exactly how it does that just from standing on it.
Those are all estimations based on height.
On your height and weight, so you have to input obviously your age, your height. That sort of thing before you start to use it. It's very easy to set up, connects to your Wi-Fi, and there's no need to write it down, which you would have to do with a mechanical scale. You know, have to have a little book where you write your weight each day.
Or log it manually on Connect.
Exactly, yeah. With this, it does it for you. So, stand on your scale, you go to your computer, there's your weight, and there's the pretty graph showing you how much you've put on because of all those Nando's burgers you ate the previous day.
You can't even blame the slow Wi-Fi connection for the weight gain on your scale. I knew the Wi-Fi's lagging. I was adding 10 pounds. Can't use that excuse.
Indeed. And this weekend I'm going to run 21K, so I'm quite interested to see what impact that has on my weight Monday morning.
Nice.
Cool. And speaking of the weekend, that's all our show this week. As always, if you've got any feedback, please drop us a mail. We'd love to hear from you. Email address is info@techcentral.co.za. And by the way, we love the fact that our listenership is actually literally soaring at the moment. Rechad, I'm going to show you the latest download numbers for the show.
Oh yeah, please.
But I think we've pretty much doubled our listenership over the last few months. So thanks for listening to the show. We really appreciate it. And until next time, we won't be recording next week, by the way, because I'm not here, but we'll be back in 2 weeks' time. So until then, from Rechad and myself, take care. Cheers.
Ciao, ciao.